May it please the court, there are two main questions. The first is whether the contract provision here is contrary to appropriations law. The second is whether it is an excessive interference with the management right to assign work. Now, on the first question,
if we think the agency's correct on the second, we don't have to address the first, right?
No, you do, because if the provision were contrary to appropriations law, it would be contrary to law under 7117 of the statute.
He's asking the other way around. If it turns out it's not a, it doesn't come within your second category.
Right.
Correct.
Then the first is irrelevant.
That's correct.
And that's what we said in
the I misunderstood, that, Judge Tatel. I'm sorry. Yes. The answer to your question is yes.
Okay. Thank you.
With respect to the first question, the FLRA now acknowledges that spending discretion can be implicitly authorized and express statutory authority is not required. But the authority asserts that spending discretion must be determined by disregarding the collective bargaining law. The authority cites no judicial precedent for this proposition. It erroneously asserts that it is consistent with Comptroller General decisions. We cited in page 5 of our opening brief a Comptroller General decision that says exactly the opposite. And this idea of the authorities is contrary to its own past decisions in which it has authorized agencies to provide unions facilities and equipment and to reimburse their travel and other collective bargaining expenses. The idea that in determining the scope of an agency's authority, one should disregard entirely a law that the authority that the agency must obey simply makes no sense and should be rejected by the court. On the second question of excessive interference, it's undisputed that this provision satisfies the primary criterion that this court identified in the AFG Local 1923 case for an arrangement that does not excessively interfere with the management right to assign work. Because the provision here requires only financial reimbursement, it does not hamper in any way the effectiveness or efficiency of the actual performance of work.
Suppose the employee had committed him or herself to $25,000 worth of non-refundable airplane tickets.
Whether a provision should have a cap or not have a cap.
It doesn't have a cap, right?
This one does not.
Okay,
but
so,
whether.
So how, I mean, the agency has said, and the agency is the expert here, the agency has said that's going to adversely affect management's ability or freedom to assign work. What possible basis do we have for second guessing that?
Well, that's what the authority's position is, but that's not what the agency representatives who negotiated this contract provision determined.
But it's the agency whose judgment we defer to here, right?
Yes, you must defer to the authority's interpretation of the law.
Yeah, and it applies a balancing act here, right? A balancing test.
Well, the standard is whether it's appropriate.
Yeah, and it balances one interest against the other, and it's concluded here that without a cap, this interferes with, they don't even say that. They just say it interferes with management's right. I just don't know how we would, by which we would say that's wrong. How would we do that?
Well, number one, because it's inconsistent with the authority's past decisions, and Your Honor is not correct. That's not what the authority has said. Their brief expressly says that caps or limits are not a legal requirement, and how that can be reconciled.
Well, we have to look at what the authority itself said, and it seems to me that two key sentences say, the agency's liability under the provision is so uncontrollable, so unforeseeable, and so unrelated to the agency's exercise of its right to assign work as to be excessive. In this respect, the absence of any limit or cap on the agency's potential economic liability would interfere with or hinder the agency's decision to cancel leave of employees in mobilizing and deploying employees for military missions. Now, we've said in that Treasury case that we afford considerable deference to FLRA's balancing of management and employee interests under its excessive interference test. So
yes.
How can we say that those two sentences are beyond the pale with respect to the deference we owe FLRA?
Here's how. One of the standards for finding an FLRA decision arbitrary and capricious is whether it departs without explanation from past precedent. There's been plenty of opportunity in past cases which have approved reimbursements.
The only one that I know that's approved the exact same one is that NAGE case, which they distinguish on the grounds that involved non-appropriated funds.
No. There have been past cases in which they have approved as appropriate arrangements reimbursement of uniform expenses.
Right, they have distinguished them. They did distinguish those. They have a footnote in this opinion in which they explain that, at least as to some of the ones you're mentioning now, there are specific statutory appropriation provisions.
That's a different question. They distinguish those cases on by saying, well, there was an express statutory authorization. Now they concede an implicit authorization is sufficient.
How can it excessively interfere with the mission if Congress provides this as part of the mission? If Congress says you can spend the money on uniforms, or that you must spend the money on uniforms, then that certainly is an appropriate way to distinguish a case from one where Congress doesn't say anything and you're asking for an implied expenditure.
Well, Congress has said the agency may expend money for general agency operations, and agency operations must be in compliance with the collective bargaining law, which gives the agency discretion to negotiate these matters if they're appropriate as a matter of law. Whether it's appropriate as a matter of law depends upon legal standards. There has been no cap or any limit placed on reimbursement provisions in the past.
Doesn't it stand to reason that if I'm a manager making that sort of decision regarding possible National Guard deployment, that I'm going to think twice about canceling leave if I'm potentially going to run up a huge bill reimbursing Guard members for their personal travel expenses? Doesn't that just make sense?
Well, first of all, this doesn't concern National Guard deployments. It concerns cancellation of leave to return for civilian work. It doesn't apply at all to a National Guard deployment. And as Judge Garland pointed out in the last argument in this case, this is the kind of arrangement that a good manager might very well want to have.
Yeah, but isn't that kind of... I saw that argument in your brief. I mean, the agency has decided that's not... That's not the kind of provision that a good manager would want.
The agency representatives who negotiated and agreed to this contract provision thought they wanted it.
Yeah, but we owe deference on judgments of this kind, namely workplace judgments, to the FLRA, not the negotiators of the contract.
Well, you must, as a matter, yes, you defer to their interpretation of the statute.
You say to us, well, managers would want a provision like this. The FLRA has a different view.
Yes, and it's inappropriate for them as a matter of law.
I mean, either view is. I could make an argument either way. So, given that, how could we possibly second guess the FLRA's judgment?
Well, because it's inconsistent with past decisions, and because it's a matter that should.
Well, I agree with you.
It should be negotiated. Because there could be differing views as to whether or not it's a good idea under particular circumstances.
When you say that the agency thought it was a good idea, the Secretary of DOD did not, right?
Well, the Secretary of DOD said it was contrary to law, just like the FLRA.
Right.
The people on the scene said it was a very good idea. They wanted it. They agreed to it.
Well, I appreciate that, but the people on the scene are only a small part of the entire Department of Defense.
Well, but the agency head's decision is not whether it's a good idea or not. The agency head can only disapprove a negotiated contract if it's contrary to law.
And it would be contrary to law if it were not an appropriate.
Yes, and that's right? The question presented.
Absolutely.
And under the past precedents that have defined what an appropriate arrangement is, this is an appropriate arrangement. It doesn't interfere at all with assignment of work. It's undisputed that there is no interference here with the agency's right to determine its budget. And how can a provision that requires only financial reimbursement not be an interference with the budget, but be an interference with assignment of work when it doesn't impact in any way the effectiveness or the efficiency of the performance of work?
When you say that it doesn't affect a military deployment, aren't there civilian tasks in connection with a military deployment?
Or, yes.
There is a military deployment, members of the Guard might be of this union might be called back for civilian work in connection with that deployment.
Oh, that's one of the reasons. Yes, that could happen. There are many reasons. Their entire job is to do this.
Right. So if that's the case, this provision would still apply, though. Is that right?
If they're recalled to do civilian work, yes.
Even if it's in connection with a military deployment.
Well, if that's the reason why they're being called back to work, yes. But the point is, the idea that an arrangement. The appropriateness of an arrangement depends upon whether it relates somehow to the agency's reason for wanting to assign work That makes no sense and has no basis in the statutory language. Well, the question...
some of the cases talk about whether it affects the core function of the agency. And military deployments are the core function, and this affects that by making it more difficult to respond. And it is relevant. It may not be the right answer, but it is certainly relevant, isn't it?
Well, no. The core mission of this agency, in terms of its civilian work, is to train and prepare and repair equipment and that sort of thing. And yes, in general, that is in preparation for military operations. But the authority hasn't said that this provision is non-negotiable solely in the context of technician employment, as opposed to other government-wide employment. That's not the basis for their decision here. The question that's presented is whether this is inappropriate as an arrangement. Government-wide.
Okay, thank you. Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Section 7117A1 of the statute removes from an agency's obligation to bargain any proposal or provision that's not consistent.
Before you get too far, I just want to, sure. Before I forget the very last statement of opposing counsel, his position is that this decision is government-wide, that it is not specific to this union, this unit, this bargaining unit. I had the impression from reading this opinion of FLRAA that it is specifically has to do with, among other things, interfere with the agency's decisions to cancel leave in mobilizing and deploying employees for military missions, that it depended on the fact that it was uncontrollable, it didn't have caps, and therefore that FLRAA might reach a different decision with respect to a different agency. Is that correct or not correct?
That's correct, solely with respect to whether it's an appropriate arrangement.
Yes,
with
only
that analysis.
That we've been discussing.
Appropriate arrangement analyses are always context-specific. That certainly principles are applicable as precedent, right. But the actual holding is context-specific. As I was saying, the authority's position is this proposal is contrary to law because it requires expenditures of appropriated funds that are not authorized by Congress. The authority has uniformly analyzed 7117 questions in the following. The question is, does federal law permit the agency to do what the union is asking? They reasonably concluded in this case that federal law does not permit the agency to make these reimbursements because they are inconsistent with appropriations law. The union's alternative theory is that, well, this is an appropriate arrangement. Appropriate arrangements are negotiable. That's the authority. First, as a general rule, the authority reiterated and explained in the last decision that the statute itself is not a grant of spending authority. The statute does not expand agency spending discretion beyond what they already have. It does require them, where they have spending authority, to exercise that authority and that discretion.
You would agree with me that an easier way for us to dispose of the case in your favor would be to focus on the appropriate arrangement.
Certainly, that's sufficient. If this is not an appropriate arrangement, which it is not, that would resolve the case. The authority reasonably held that this is not an appropriate arrangement because it excessively interferes with management's determinations with respect to assigned work. What it does, it puts extraneous factors into an agency decision, and conditioning decisions with respect to management rights.
And you would agree that the statutory authority issues a closer call for us?
Pardon?
Which is your stronger argument?
I think the strongest argument in that it resolves the case cleanly is that this is simply not an appropriate arrangement, and we don't have to reach the other issues. And
you say in your brief that
pardon me, Your Honor?
You say in your brief that the employees can protect themselves by buying trip insurance or non-refundable tickets?
That's what the authority pointed out. Well, yes, Your Honor.
Do you think anybody at the authority has tried to buy a non-refundable ticket recently?
Don't know, Your Honor.
Seriously, I mean, they're extremely expensive. I mean, it's not really a realistic possibility for employees.
Well, I think the only point was that in making plans of that sort, there's some risk. There are alternative ways, but that the fact that risk could not be borne by the agency. In fact, it can't be by appropriations law.
I mean, that's That point really isn't relevant to the authority's decision, correct?
It certainly isn't dispositive, and I think the authority's analysis.
If it were relevant and it rests on the proposition that they could buy non-refundable tickets, we might have some doubt about it, don't you think?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I said if it was relevant and it rested on the authority's belief that people could buy non-refundable tickets, don't you think we might have some doubt about the agency's reasoning?
I think, as you said, Your Honor, that factor is not significant in the appropriate arrangements analysis. What is appropriate, what is significant, is the burden it places on management decision making. If there are no further questions, the authority submits.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Did counsel have any time left? You can take a minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would only make one point. I don't think there's any basis in law for discriminating against these employees versus the employees of other agencies, and I don't think the authority's decision is based upon that. This is a holding by the authority as to whether this type of an arrangement for any employee employed in any agency is or is appropriate. They have held that this is not appropriate, and for the reasons we said, that decision is contrary to law. It's contrary to their past precedents, and the new reasoning that they offer it has no basis in the language of the statute. I will rest on that unless the court has other questions.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. Thank you both.